Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is Tall Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Sean Rogers, Adam Smith and Robbie O'Neill. It's a pleasure to have Adam, Robbie and Sean. Before the show, I meant to say this. This is actually, in a sense, it's the toughest Tall Live of the season. And the reason why it's the toughest Tall Live of the season is it's before pre-season's properly got going, so we can't get our teeth into that. All the transfer business has been done from a Liverpool point of view, so we can't get our teeth into that. That may well change if Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain leaves, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. And then the next phase of that then becomes that obviously they haven't now played a competitive game for 6 or 7 weeks. So what you've got to do is you've got to look at what's around you, you've got to look at the news, and you've got to go from there. So Robbie, Adam and Sean are going to be the absolute business, and we'll start off talking about the big man himself, Joe Gomez. And Sean, I know he's always been a player that you've loved, Gomez, a player that you've really wanted to see be able to really succeed from a Liverpool point of view. I'm intrigued by how last season probably ends up feeling for Joe. Liverpool couldn't ride Van Dijk and Gomez at once in terms of bringing them both back. They picked Van Dijk and we all understand why. But Gomez is, for me, I'm so pleased he signed this new deal. I think he's got such a good future with us.
Yeah, I think I'm Harvey Elliott's biggest fan, so like it's his poster above my bed. But Joe Gomez is very close after that. Joe Gomez would be like on the back of my door. You know? I've been a massive fan of his. I thought years ago that Liverpool would only be winning like Champions League, league titles with Gomez and Van Dijk together as a partnership. And when you look back at them kind of centre-back partnerships like Ferdinand and Vidic, with your Liverpool hat on like Hansen and Lawrence, and they would be centre-backs that are willing to go 2v2 against you, centre-backs willing to go man-v-man. You know, you want to outrun us, you want to try and have better movement, you think you can kid us, you want to try and fight us, whatever you want, we'll bring it and we'll still go man-for-man with you and come out on top. With Gomez as well, I think he's underrated with the ball.
Yeah,
and the things that he brings to you there. The fact that Matip did so well and then, you know, that then feeds into Gomez not getting as much game time, probably 19, 20 as we think, because Lovren does a bit, Gomez comes into it and has a great run. I think what's interesting about the contract, though, is the fact that Gomez actually signs it. It makes tons of sense for Liverpool to want him to for a number of different reasons, protecting your asset. But the fact that he's signed it, I think, doesn't just show the commitment he's had this summer from Liverpool. I think the main thing is his injury, by all, you know, everyone felt at the time as well that his injury was worse than Van Dijk's. So I think last year was very much about the rehabilitation of Van Dijk. And I think they've said to Gomez, listen, the first half of the season's a write-off. Whatever you get in the second half of the season is just in the bank, but we need you to have a clean year. And this is the one to kick on. And of all the players, Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones, has been a lot of talk about. This is a huge year for Joe Gomez. It's a huge couple of months for him.
It is a huge preseason, Robbie, I think, for Joe. He's coming into it feeling about as probably as healthy as he has done for one in years, in an age. I'm excited. I'm really pleased he signed the deal. And as Sean says, I think it says as much about his confidence with reference to the Liverpool setup as it does about the Liverpool setup in him. We know the manager thinks he's great, but it would be understandable if Gomez had got through the season and thought to himself, well, it's going to be difficult for me to get chances. He must think to himself he can get chances.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, as you pointed out there, there were murmurings, weren't there, at the back end of last season and the middle of last season about Steven Gerrard potentially wanting to take him to Villa. And when I heard that, I was like, I was a bit disappointed because, like yourselves, I see a massive future for Gomez there at Liverpool. He's, I think you look back to the title winning season, how consistent he was and, you know, how he flourished alongside Van Dijk, and the problems we had when Gomez injured his tendon, as we all know, it derailed our season the following year.
As much as the Van Dijk wanted, Robbie, I think that's sort of been overlooked. Like, I thought he was beginning to come absolutely to the fore in Van Dijk's absence. He has a really good run of six games in between when the two things happen. And then when that happens, that's one of the things that really hurts us.
He was brilliant in the City game at the Etihad before he got injured. A lot of people forget how good he was in that game. And I think particularly with the way we play, like his recovery pace is astonishing. So if you want to play at eye line and the ball gets in behind, he's the type of centre-half you need. And there was a lot of talk about lack of centre-halves and the wrong midfielders that season. I actually think the Gomez injury, as much as as the Van Dijk one, was problematic for us. I actually think, in a way, it's not the worst thing. Because he got so much football as a young lad, it might not be the worst thing in the world for him to have played a bit less last year. Do you know what I mean? Because
miles on the clock.
Yeah, that's it. He'll be able to assess everything that's around him. He knows the competition he's got. Like, it's mad how we've gone from having no centre half to four absolute elite centre halves. And there's no reason why, with a little run of games behind him again, that Gomez can't get back to where he was before he's let himself in.
With him, Adam, I think he will get, in the first half of the season at the very least, there'll be a lot of chat about five subs, and obviously we've invested in the young lad from Scotland, Ramsey. But I think there'll still be times or opportunities where one of the things when people talk about five subs is they remember you can only name nine. And, you know, last season there was squads that first team players weren't making. There was squads that Curtis Jones wasn't getting picked for, Harvey Elliott, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think the idea that Ramsey's going to make a lot of squads and therefore be able to come off the bench to help with Trent, I think that's quite right. I think Gomez will be on the bench when he's not getting selected at centre-back. And he may well still have a bit of work to do at right-back for Liverpool here and there to support Trent. I don't think it's as simple as he'll never play there again. I think he will be doing bits and pieces there for us.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's really... I think you forget just basically how often Klopp's used him at right back, mainly because a lot of us don't like it. So we sort of block it out mentally where we're like, nah, he doesn't play him at right back, but he really does. And I think that a big part of the reason that, I don't like him at right back, or haven't liked him at right back, I suppose I should say, is that he just doesn't create enough there. He's obviously solid defensively, doesn't create enough. And then last season, he plays that, I can't remember the match it is, but he plays that unbelievable
Watford at home.
What, there you go, that we score from. And everyone was like, oh, has he been watching Trent in training, has he? And Jürgen must have been absolutely delighted by that, because as you say, knowing what's coming, he gets to go, well, I've got a right back and a centre back as one of my nine things there with just one player. So that's ideal. It's also, I think it's so funny how when we sign a new player, everybody goes, they've got to take the time to adapt to how Klopp likes to play. But at the same time, they go, can't wait to see Ramsey at right back covering for Trent. And that's probably not going to happen in the first 6 months of this. Like, we might see it in the odd game, maybe if there's an injury or something like that. But generally speaking, we're probably not going to see it much. But, you know, he probably won't even make the bench, but he will for the cup games and things like that. So what Gomez gives is it gives him time to settle in. And, you know, we don't know what Jürgen Klopp's thinking. Personally, I always get a bit annoyed about the Trent to midfield conversation, because he's one of the best players in the world at right back. Why do you want to move him? I don't get it. So I'm quite happy to see Trent stay at right back. But Jürgen might be thinking, well, my long-term aim is to get him in the middle. And that's why we've seen him basically play in midfield, even though he's normally a right back at certain times during games. And it might well be that he's going, Ramsey is my long-term right back so I can move Trent into midfield, but I don't need to rush that right at the moment. And I've also got time enough and players enough to give the centre-backs a bit of breathing room and don't need to play them all to death, which we have in the past.
For me, Robbie, one of the things this does is it gets us into a position where, he signed what will be a 3-year extension from 2024. So that takes us all the way through to 2027. I think I'm right in saying maybe only 2026. Looking at the other sort of footballers who were knocking around there, Matip's contract up 2024. Van Dijk's through to 2025. You'd have thought that if Van Dijk's in good enough nick, they'll extend him. And then Konate's obviously a very young, exciting prospect. It does feel like Liverpool are in a position here where they've just got a lovely little succession plan. Konate is going to be the youngest for a couple of seasons. Gomez is moving into his peak years. Van Dijk's moving out of his peak years. Matip possibly moves on at the end of his deal, or maybe Liverpool do another 1 year extension if they can't find the next Konate. And just keep that sort of that conveyor belt rolling is what I think that it's what Liverpool want in every position. But it looks to me like they've absolutely nailed it now at centre back with this contract agreement.
Absolutely. Like he's 25 now, so what he'll be 28 by the time this contract gets to its end. And he's coming into the prime years of his career, particularly as a centre half. He tends to peak between 27-32. So I mean historically anyway. So who knows? I also think a massive thing with Gomez here is looking at Matip's injury record prior to last season and the little changes the club have made, you know, particularly with the medical staff and with the rehabilitation and the injury prevention. I do wonder if they've been looking at it and think we could actually, all of his injury problems in the past, we can write them off. We can put a plan in place which will keep him vital and keep him ready, you know, moving forwards. I might even be able to prolong his career. I think the massive thing is interesting because I think, like, I was so surprised last year by how much Matip played. Because the argument was like, he'll play one game a week, but before you know it, he's playing three or four games on the spin. You know, he's gone from being made of glass to being made of, like, titanium. You know, he's... and it's they'll be looking at that and go, how can, in the long run, we get the best out of our players in these positions? Particularly positions where there's a bit of wear and tear. You know, it's a very physical position and, you know, as the older you get, your body's going to be going through it. I think, like, it'll be interesting. I think watching keeping your eye on the under-19s European Championships this week, you see Yerel Kwanzaa doing quite well. And you start to think, like, what is the future for Liverpool? Because if Gomez is 28 by the end of this contract, around that time, Konate is going to be what? He's going to be, what, 26, 27? Van Dijk, as you say, he might be in the latter stages of his career. They might be just looking to see if there's anything within. You know what I mean?
What the conveyor belt thing does, I think, Sean, is it buys them time and options. It means they can assess. If they want to move, they can move. If there's someone who they're desperate to get, like they were with Konate, they can wait if they want to. I think that's what, by locking these positions down when they feel as though they've done that, and I think they've done that with the attack as well now, it means, for instance, they can take a couple of years to assess Cade Gordon and find out how to get the best Cade Gordon. As Robbie saying, you know, lads who are away at the minute playing international duty in European under-19s, well, they can have a look at one of them. That's, for me, that's what's really interesting. If they get this stuff right, it actually means they can make decisions in a relaxed way around time.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. I mean, Van Dijk's going to be saying, I want you to bench me, just not now. You know, I'm more than happy for you to be my biggest hurdle in getting a new contract. And I think Liverpool will obviously, in all of the cup ties, and especially if we can get things like Champions League done early, subject to fitness, they've got to be looking at a Gomez-Konate partnership as often as possible, because I think you need 20, 30, 40 games really together before you can truly then judge it to go, well, do we want to give that partnership another 20, 30, 40 games? We can't afford, though, to go through that 20, 30 games letting them make mistakes on our watch too much. So, you know, and again, Van Dijk will, in I think, want to be rotated in a way.
Yeah.
For his own longevity and performance levels.
And for the World Cup coming up. I mean, he can't do all 22 League and European Cup games and then go away to a World Cup, sure, but he's captain of Holland and he'll think that he can get this Holland side at least to the last four.
No, 1,000,000%. And I also think with Gomez, he needs to have a combination of playing and training. And I think Konate is still at a point in time when he needs a combination of playing and training. I think when they get a bit more experienced, that's when they're a bit more like, well, you know, I just need to play. Like, I've done all my learning here. I know exactly in and out how you want me to play. I just need to be on the pitch now and doing what I need to do. And I think that's the positive about Gomez signing the contract, because I'd imagine there would have been plenty of people in his ear, and I don't just mean the people around him, there'd have been loads of players and clubs and coaches. You know, if I was Steven Gerrard, I'd have been hounding him on WhatsApp. I'd have lived in his DMs, everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, you name it. I'd have been all over him. And he could literally go and walk in, I think, to any other team. I if Gomez is at Man City, he plays. He might not play every week, but he plays. And every other side, he walks in. And I think he's a potential future Liverpool captain, and I think that's why they'll have been so keen to pin him down.
Moving along to talk about someone else looking like they're going to want to pin down Adam. There was reports that they're talking to Naby Keita about a new deal, that they want to get the new deal done for Keita, the new deal done for Jota. We'll talk about Jota another day. But a new deal done for Keita, a new deal done for Jota. Keita, obviously only 1 year left. There was a comment above, which we can push on to move the conversation towards from someone on the Tour Live package here saying, you know, do you think we lack in the midfield area and it's going to be the main reason we lose the league from Manchester City? I think as part of the midfield conversation, I actually think it's important Liverpool get some continuity out of Keita coming into this forthcoming season. It's a season he can build on. He only makes 19 starts in the league and the Champions League. But as the season wore on, it felt, rather than maybe the lived experience of the team and the manager, but it felt to me, at least from the outside, like he was becoming increasingly important, and that centre midfield became three from four, and not the idea that it's just going to be the same three for every big game.
Yeah, I have to say I'm a bit of a Keita skeptic, if I'm honest. And I think when you've been at the club, what is it now, 4 years, 5 years? I think when you've been at the club as long as that, and there's still question marks about what you're delivering, I think that's problematic. And I agree completely with what you say in terms of it being the three from four sort of thing, but I almost feel that's as much to do with what everybody else is giving. You know, Milner's older, Oxlade-Chamberlain was not really giving enough, and oftentimes Jürgen didn't even play him in the midfield anyway. I'm not sure that if we had other midfield options that the manager had a bit more faith in, that Keita would play as much as he did. And I think that shows in, as you say, the lived experience of the team. 19 starts in the season that we've just had, 19 starts across the Premier League and Champions League is not great. I think that everybody, and I'm going to say everybody sort of sensible, you know, those that don't have his picture as their profile on Twitter or call themselves Keita billionaire or whatever, like, sensible people are kind of going, when he's good, he's great. When he's not, I don't know what he's doing, and I'm not totally sure what he's offering. And I think that's kind of how the manager's feeling. So I'm kind of up in the air about it. If the club come out tomorrow and say, you signed a new deal, here you go, I'm not going to be heading to Anfield with my pitchfork. But equally, if somebody said, look, they've had a big offer for him and they decided to take it, I go, yeah, I can understand why. And I just feel like that there aren't many Liverpool players that I'm so on the fence over. But I really am with him. I'm just a bit like, yeah, he's fine either way.
Doesn't the new deal, Robbie, suggest that they're not quite as on the fence? Or do you think it's a case of them protecting the asset? Because they obviously paid a lot of money for him in the first place. He's coming into a peak year. For me, the idea that they are looking to extend him, it says to me they can see a bit of continuity between, I think, Thiago and Keita. That having either of them play that left channel is hugely helpful for Liverpool. I think the right channel's a source of almost endless discussion as to what Klopp wants from the right channel, as to what Liverpool want from the right channel, as to who the right player is for that channel. But I think that left channel, which is a bit more conservative, sits a little bit closer to the holder, whether it's Henderson or whether it's Fabinho who sits back there. I think Liverpool want to have Thiago or Keita fulfil that role as much as possible. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're looking at a new deal.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I'm not as much of a sceptic as Adam is about him personally. I actually think, if he puts that goal away in the European, if he puts that chance away in the European Cup final, a lot of the conversations about Naby Keita are very different. The last season he had at Liverpool, I think, is the best season he's had. There's various games you can point to. I thought in the FA Cup semi-final, for instance, I think in the first half he absolutely ran the game. Yep. It's the best I've seen him play for us, and that's against a team that would then go on to win the league. He didn't go missing at Old Trafford. You know, I thought he really shone when we beat Man United. And also, there's like games like Newcastle where, you know, it's a fantastic goal he scores and it wins us the game, keeps us in the title race to the last game of the season. I think the problem with players like Keita is he's a bit of a mad one because he's so aggressive, he's so mobile. But I think in a way, because he's also, he's very skillful, he's very good on the ball, he keeps his head up when he's on the ball. I think he's very hard for people to actually pick all the players. And I think because of that, what then happens is, when he does, okay, this, okay, clear, but he'd do anything brilliantly. Because he's aggressive and because of the way he plays the game, the similarities between him and Thiago, he hasn't got the passing range Thiago's got. He's probably a better tackler than Thiago. In fact, I know he's a better tackler than Thiago is. So for that reason, that spot on the left-hand side of midfield filling in there, yeah, I think that they're definitely looking at that. I also think that they'll get a look at him in pre-season. And that missed Champions League final, it was really, really bad. It was terrible. Every time I watch it, I cringe, you know. And I think
it's the moment of the football match itself I most remember from the game. It's the moment I most remember. The moment I dwell on, more than the Salah miss one-on-one where the keeper makes the great save, the thing that whenever I think about that game, the first thing I think about is when the ball dropped to him on the edge.
Exactly, and he should have scored. And I think partly the contract is, it is second the asset, but I think they'll be looking at him thinking, how does he come back from that? How does he start pre-season? How does he get in? The other thing is he's not going to the World Cup, is he?
No.
He's one of the players that's not going to be going to the World Cup. So when the other players are away, it's a case of, does he get like a little mini pre-season himself in that period? Do the club get hold of him? Did he say, this is what we want you to do in the second half of the season, we're going to be using you? And maybe that'll boost his confidence, I don't know. But I don't think it's as bad as a lot of people make out, personally.
I think there's a funny thing, Sean, because it's about, firstly, I think this is conversations to an extent about how so far at least Jurgen Klopp's used his midfielders, because it's difficult for any of them really to grab limelight in the way Liverpool play. I think there's then another thing here where with Keita, for me, it's a conversation that's around pecking order. Thiago, for instance, has been able to grab limelight because of the way he plays and what he's about. But, you know, Liverpool, someone has to be Liverpool's fourth choice midfielder. Someone has to be Liverpool's eighth choice midfielder. At the minute, I'd argue that's Oxlade-Chamberlain. There sort of does have to be that order of where you think they're going to play. The thing for Keita, and the thing that he might be saying around this contract stuff is, I think he looks better the more he gets in terms of chances and games and opportunities. And that's maybe something for us to think about, but it's difficult. It's difficult to quite see that in the way in which we currently have this midfield set up.
Completely. I think this season, he hasn't really got too many excuses now. Robbie was talking about the changes they've made about injury prevention, the medical team. He's been able to come into Liverpool. And the problem for him was he was a big fish in a small pond that could be a dynamic number eight walking the line. Like when we signed him, we were all thinking, there's a couple of Reds coming here. And his composure and settling into his role in the squad and that cog in the midfield machine, you know, that left-hand side role, Thiago's able to show his flair while still performing the role of that cog, the Wijnaldum cog, the Thiago cog, Keita filling in that role. You've seen Curtis Jones, I think, struggling with that a little bit in terms of, I know what this role needs, but how can I pick the right skill of mine at the right time? And you just have to roll with that. And that's why Curtis Jones, I think, gets a bit of frustration among the fan base, because he's got like this amazing toolkit of skills. And it's not like if he was at a smaller side, he'd just be able to do them as and when he wants. When they don't come off, no one notices. At Liverpool, he's got to fulfill an exact specific role and then pick and choose when the right times are to pick what skill. And unfortunately, you just have to sort of sit and suffer for a bit, because the only way of them learning is that with Keita, he's gone through all that now. I think is possibly his biggest issue is that it's very rare for me that you see him deliver an 8 out of 10 or a 7 out of 10. And I think that's probably where Adam's coming from, maybe, that you can never be too certain what version of him you're getting. I think now Klopp's got the certainty that he will do the tactical job well. And that's why Liverpool will trust him in the big games. But from the performance element over that, would any of us know if he's doing a 9 or a 6 or 9 and a 5 even? And I think that's the tricky thing. I think now is the time for him really to bite down on that and go, listen, a bad day for me is a 6 or a 7 out of 10. That's the worst you're getting. And I think that's where Henderson ended up getting himself to, that like, yeah, I can have a bad 20 minutes and I'll play myself back out of it. You're never getting lower than a 6. You can't win league titles with players who are throwing in a 5 or a 4 out of 10, even for 20 minutes. And I think with him, I think he'll be available this year. I think tactically he's got it to a T. I do think you will see the best version of him this year, and I think that's why Liverpool want the contract signed.
couple of comments are quite negative around him, just sort of come through here. But this I want to talk about this one specifically before we go to the break, and then we'll talk about the preseason tour in the next bit. But he says the Kennewick Scouser is the username. Sadly not. He just hasn't done what we hoped he would game in, game out. Moments are brilliant, certainly, but it is only ever moments. I'll come to you first, Sean, and then I'll bring Adam and Robbie back in. But this is where I feel not just a bit sorry for him, but this is where I feel a bit sorry for almost anyone currently who lines up in Liverpool's midfield, as it has been broadly under Jurgen Klopp, which is that the job is moments of brilliance. The you know, I think there's certain games where Man United at home, for instance, where Thiago got to play a 10 out of 10, not least because of the way Man United were. But I've seen Thiago have difficult 20s in games at some point this season, certainly in the first sort of 20 minutes of certain games. I feel a bit like moments of brilliance is sort of the job description if you're playing in Liverpool's centre mid, whereas if you play in Manchester City's centre mid, it's built in a way which is, no, your brilliance is the brilliance that's going to inspire the whole team and pull the whole thing together. And that's, even though the managers play similar shapes, that's one of the differences between the two managers.
It is, and I also think it depends what side of the midfield you play on. So when Harvey Elliott plays the right-hand side role, which I think Liverpool have got earmarked for him, because Trent comes and takes, if you like, what Harvey Elliott's position would be. Harvey Elliott's job is to do the opposite of whatever Salah does. So it's to give Salah the freedom and go, well, if Mo goes inside, you go on the outside. And if Mo goes on the outside, you go on the in and play almost like you're a 10. So for Harvey Elliott, that suits him down to a T. When Jordan Henderson plays that role well, he's great at going on that outside right role and making a decision as to when to clip them crosses in. You know, how to play that kind of a role. The left-hand side midfield role for Liverpool has always been about getting the most out of Robertson and Mane, both offensively and defensively. And it's a bit of a thankless role, that one. Now, the difference with Thiago, he's that good. I mean, let's face it, Thiago could look class just putting his slippers on, I reckon, and walking downstairs for his brekkie. He's just style, isn't he? But it's not a coincidence that we've had players who could play as a number 10 for smaller sides, say weaker sides like Wijnaldum, Curtis Jones, players like that in that left-hand side role, that they've got to fulfill that job for the team. And that job is you're the third man in this Robertson-Mané partnership. And Luis Diaz, you think, will probably fulfill a similar role in terms of his movement to that of Mané. So I do think that Liverpool are judging this different to us as fans, in that Liverpool are going, you have a specific role that you have to do there. We are judging you by that. The next bit is, what can you give us on top of that within that role? Because when you saw the shackles come off Wijnaldum, he's banging them in left, right and centre, isn't he? Like, Wijnaldum with the shackles off for us was like, do you want a winner? Do you need a goal? Do you? Well, here's one coming right up. And Thiago's able to do that. I think what we've got to have with Keita, it's not the moments that stand out. I think it's when it's not on for him, it doesn't look good, does it? Like, it stands out. Like, when he has that 5 out of 10, even for half an hour, it stands out like a sore thumb. And I think that's what's got to be eradicated.
I think it's interesting, Robbie, that to come back to literally the miss in the final. I when you said before, if he sticks that in, everyone feels massively differently. And I think that is what Sean's talking about there. That was the opportunity actually for a moment of brilliance, if you know what I mean. If he just gets that from out from under his feet, takes a step into it, pings it into the bottom corner of the far side, wraps his foot around it and puts it there rather than do what he does, everyone goes, there we are at the big moment. He's done all the 6, 7 out of 10 stuff for us, and then he stood up and found that one. And that's what we needed, and that's what we wanted. I do think that, you know, your version of events around that, I think if that's knocked in, everyone, not everyone, but there's more of a clamour for a new contract. And that's, you know, that sort of boosts everything up a little level for him. But I also probably boosts himself up a little level, like you say, because the one thing that Wijnaldum did do for Liverpool all the way through his Liverpool career, whether he was frustrating at times or whether or not you felt he wasn't in games as much as you'd want, every now and again, but pretty regularly, he'd pop up with a big goal.
That's it. I think he was, when he was in the Bundesliga, we were kind of, a lot of the reports that we were getting about Keita is that he was kind of a Steven Gerrard-esque midfielder. So that's what I was buying into. But then when you see the stature of him, you realise you're getting a very different type of midfielder. He's more like he's more like an Iniesta, isn't he? In that he's small, he's mobile, he's nippy. He gets in and around the midfield, and he is aggressive. I mean, I think one thing that really, like, I feel sorry for him about in relation to that miss is, I do think there were, like, as I pointed out before, there were points throughout the season where you could point to them and say, he's shown in this game.
Newcastle, as you said, he scores the winner at Newcastle, and it's a great goal.
And that was a tough game. That was a tough game. You know what I mean? And it was a great goal. Now, if he does put that away in the final, people are going, this lad's mentality shifted, because he scored the winner. Yeah, he went there. He ran the show. He's gone to Wembley. He's ran the show. He's gone to Paris, and he scored a goal in the European Cup final. That would have been the conversation. So therein, it would be Naby Keita's success. But because it's not, it's Naby Keita. Is he really right? I think it's dead interesting, Sean, with you mentioned about Wijnaldum and Jones, because I think, like, a lot of the time we see these midfielders curbing their attacking instincts. Like, Wijnaldum came to Liverpool, he was a 10 essentially at Newcastle before he came here. Jones, when he first broke into the team, he's playing on the left of the front three. You know what I mean? Like, Wolves in the League Cup a few years ago, I think when he made his debut, he was playing on the left of the front three. The goal he scores at Everton in the FA Cup, you know, he's on the edge of the... He's smack bang on top of the nine. So it's like, these are players who have attacking instincts. And I do think, like as Neil pointed out before, it's just the merciless task of being a Liverpool midfielder. There's a lot of talk about Jude Bellingham at the moment. How do we know that Jude Bellingham would come in? Because he's got a massive skill set that he'd come in and he wouldn't find it quite difficult to play in Liverpool's midfield, because it is a thankless task. There's a lot of running involved. They're not encouraged to shoot by the looks of it and stuff like that. It's I don't know. I do feel sorry for him. But again, as I say, the managerial side of the club, they're all up for him. So
just on the idea of, I think how Jude Bellingham might do well is he might get to play the right-hand channel. And that is the strangeness of this, Adam, where we end up is, I think that there will be, and I think that Trent does define it, as Sean says before, because the nature of how Trent plays and what he offers with Salah on that right-hand side, because it sort of skews, if you imagine sort of turning something like a hexagon a little bit, Salah goes furthest forward. The effect of that means that midfielder moves further forward, but the effect of that on the axis means that the left side of midfielder moves a little bit back and the right back moves a little bit further forward, if you imagine just sort of shifting that hexagon. And that's why it is hard. But I don't like Keita on the right-hand side of the three as much, because he doesn't want to run outside Salah. So if Salah cuts in, he doesn't want to go out. He wants to, you know, he's not going to do Trent's job for him as well in quite the same way that Henderson does. Henderson does lots of good off the ball work. And that's why with all of this, when you talk about Keita, it's a conversation that falls between all these stools. And it's why I perfectly understand why people, both in the comments and you yourself, Adam, end up with the point of view that you have. You know, I don't think it's an unreasonable one, because I think it's all very difficult.
It is. And the thing is, I guess, I completely agree with what everybody said about him. And I think that in some ways that tells its own story. You know, like I certainly don't have I'm not Kev Walsh. Let's put it that way. Like I'm not sort of waiting for...
And which of us is, sadly.
Exactly, yeah. I'm not waiting to drive him to his next club or anything like that. But I think in terms of, like, talking about the Champions League goal is the perfect example, or the Champions League moment, I should say, is the perfect example in the final. If I'm drawing a list of the players on the pitch that I want to be in that situation, I think I've got the goalkeeper ahead of him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just trying to think, like, who do I want to be there? And it's not him. And for somebody playing in the midfield where you're kind of coming on to the end of something, again, that just feels problematic. And have you got the stats nearly easily? Don't worry if you haven't, but easily, have you got the stats of how many starts he had across the whole season?
No, not to hand.
Because I'd be intrigued to know that, because I just think for all of the talk of all the management team liking the man and all this sort of stuff, I just think 19 starts across the campaign where we've played every single game, you know, that in the two most important competitions, where pretty much everybody's crying out and going, we need a new midfielder this summer. It just says to me, it tells me a story, as does the fact, by the way, that he hasn't signed a contract yet, because I don't imagine this is going to be the most difficult for them to do, in that he's not asking for Salah's wages. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think that I'm not convinced the management team are going, he's brilliant, he's great, or what, you know, he's doing all the things that I want him to do. I sort of feel like maybe he's not doing all the things that we want him to do. And we've seen the manager literally take him off at half time in really big games, where the manager's gone, he's just not doing what I'm asking. But I assume the manager's saying he's not doing, because it wasn't injury. It was at Man United, was kind of the biggest example of it, where the manager's taking him off. So I think that he's a player. I think what Robbie said about what he was like kind of what we were expecting before he arrived, that didn't help him. And I think the other thing that hasn't helped him are all of his fan accounts that when he does something like drops a shoulder and turns a player, they're acting like it's, you know, God's gift to football. None of it helps when you're just sort of going...
Don't think Klopp's really referencing that, though, to be fair, Adam. I think he's on.
I just mean in terms of, like, my opinion, you know, my opinion, you just kind of end up going, I think you take a contrary opinion to people sometimes, don't you? When people are acting like something's the best thing ever, you sort of there going, is it? And so I don't know. I think you're absolutely right. The manager's not, but he also only started him 19 times in the biggest games.
Okay, that will do us on Naby Keita. We'll come back in a minute for part four of Tour Live and we'll chat about the pre-season tour and who everyone thinks needs to go there. I mean, someone might go for Naby Keita as a big name in that as well. But we'll come back in a minute or two if you're listening to Tour Live as a podcast. Coming up, we've got Jay Rodriguez on Sadio Mane. We're pushing this out. We've had the fantastic painting video done in conjunction with Nivea this week on the Anfield Wrap around Sadio, which was, you know, it's an absolute pleasure to have been part of at the Anfield Wrap. Everyone loves it as a piece of work. So check that out across all of our socials. Great to work with Nivea on it. Great to work with everyone on it, it is fair to say. And also simultaneously, if I was to be really honest with you, we were doing a Sadio Mane player profiles. We interviewed Jay Rodriguez and then Liverpool sold Sadio Mane. So we wanted to do something with it because, you know, we still love Sadio and we quite like Jay Rodriguez. So coming up in a minute or two is Jay Rodriguez on Sadio Mane, but do check the video out as well. And we've got the wonderful Matty Loughlin on the Shipbuilders album. Now, an album that's been really well reviewed. Matty, a long time friend of the show. And I'm so pleased for him that the record is as good as it is, that it's been as well reviewed as it is, and that it feels like the Shipbuilders are on the march. So two legends of the Northwest, first and foremost, Jay Rodriguez, then Matty Loughlin. And I think they've all got some John Gibbons involvement as well. You know what I mean? It doesn't get more legendary. This is Tour Live. If you're watching it as a video live, we will be back in a second or two. If it is this other stuff, you've got Jay Rodriguez and then you've got Matty.
It's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson again with another insert courtesy of Audio Boom. Thanks a lot for them for finding us as partners. And this one is an easy one because it is Shopify, and Shopify is the website that we use to sell all our merchandise. And so if you've bought a t-shirt from the Anfield Wrap, you have used Shopify as well. And hopefully you found it an easy process. It's certainly an easy process for us, how we're able to design it all, how we're able to manage it all, and how we're able to fulfill all our orders and get them out to you as quickly as the UK and International Post Service allows us to. It's been good for us, Shopify, hasn't it, Neil? In terms of where we've brought them in and how we've managed to do it.
That's been absolutely brilliant for the Anfield Wrap, to be honest with you. You know, it's the first thing the Anfield Wrap is and always will be is obviously something that makes content about Liverpool Football Club, yeah. A production company that's bespoke around Liverpool Football Club. So the idea of all the other stuff that we have to do around the business at times is tricky, and you need to have the right sort of support and the right partnerships around that. And Shopify have been able to be that for us, really. We've been able to mould it. It's very, very malleable indeed in terms of being able to use their platform. And within that as well, you know, we're able then to get the best sort of merchandise out in as straightforward a way as humanly possible to people. So no, it's only been a bonus for us. It's only made it easier for the Anfield Wrap to be able to produce some really, really good merchandise and be able to get it to customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Shopify makes it simple for anyone to sell anywhere. We are anyone, let's face it.
And we are also simple.
From creating your online shop and your look to finding new customers to scaling that burning idea with Shopify, you can do it all from one place with no need for skills in design or coding. It's a fucking good job. It's how every minute of every day a new seller makes their first sale with Shopify, and you can join them if you get a free 14-day trial. And that's what we used the first time, to be honest with you. We were like, oh, we'll give it a go. And look at us now. We used our free 14-day trial. You can get it too if you go to shopify.co.uk/wrap. That's shopify.co.uk/wrap. That's all lowercase. Get over there, get stuck in. You'll see how easy it is. And hopefully you could be selling and you could be another competitor that we slag off. So first of all, Jay, I'm interested in your first impressions of Sadio, whether you've got any memories of those, you know, early training sessions or seeing him for the first time and what sort of an impact on you and the rest of the boys he made.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think I might have been injured or coming back from injury at the time. Obviously, when he came in, you know, he was a really, you know, warm guy, fitted straight into the group, really humble and, you know, like I said, made himself really like fit into the team straight away. And then obviously his first training sessions, you know, he's so sharp and he's finishing and, the things he could do take a player on was was a big standout thing. So we were buzzing to have him in the team because he knew he was going to be a big help.
When we watch him now, we you know, we can see how direct he is. His eye for the goal. You know, obviously he's got pace to burn and knows how to use it. Was he a similar sort of player then, or is that something he developed over his time at Southampton?
No, I think obviously that's what we saw at Southampton. You know, the goals he scored for Southampton at the time, and you know, they're similar to the goals he's getting now. And I think obviously he's took it to another level with being at Liverpool. But I feel like he's always had that, you know, that threat for goal, great finishing, and like I say, can beat any man. And with the ball and without the ball, you know, he's intelligent running off the ball. It gets him in great positions. And like I say, when we had him at Southampton, he's always a threat and great to have in the team.
Yeah, Jay, I'm interested to know how much you knew about Sadio before he joined the team, because he'd sort of been a bit of a revelation over in France, coming over from Senegal, and then tore it up in Austria as well. But I suppose for you guys in the team, maybe you didn't know loads about that at the time until he came in.
No, we didn't know too much about him. But like I said, we soon got to know about him, and the first few sessions, you could see the top quality player he was. But I didn't myself personally. But you know, we had I think it was Mitch at the time, he brought players in at Southampton, and he brought some great players in. And like I said, gelled the team with the manager there, and it were a great time at Southampton. So no, like I said, I think as soon as he did come into the training ground and train and be amongst the lads, we knew what a player he was.
I think he's almost seen as a bit of a contradiction, Sadio, because he's seemed quite quiet and shy off the pitch, and then he's very sort of fiery and feisty on him. I'm interested to know what he was like on the training pitch, particularly in those early days.
Yeah, that's exactly how he is. You know, like I got on well with Sadio. He's, like I say, really humble, hardworking, you know, really wants to learn every time and win. And, you know, obviously very competitive. You see him on the pitch, and he was the same in training, exactly the same. And I think, you know, he had a lot of respect from the lads. And like I said, I remember he always worked extremely hard doing extra sessions in the gym. And I think the greatest thing is such a good guy and a humble guy that, you know, everyone loved him.
He finishes that first season as top scorer, but there's one game in particular at the end of the season that gets a lot of attention because he scores a hat-trick in less than 3 minutes, breaks Robbie Fowler's record. Yeah. You know, which is a funny one because it's obviously sort of at Liverpool now. I know you didn't play it in that game, but I don't know if you were there in the stadium. But just generally, what is it like around the football club when someone does something, you know, as huge as that, a hat-trick in less than 3 minutes?
Yeah, I remember I was in the stands. Like I said, I was coming back from injury then, and I was with Fraser Forster, and we both couldn't believe it. Obviously, we were buzzing for him, buzzing that we were winning. But yeah, I just think, you know, that's what he's capable of. He's capable of changing the game just by his quality and his threat. And yeah, for him to get the quickest hat-trick is a great achievement. But like I say, I think everyone was obviously made up with it. We won the game in that fashion, but I think everyone made up for him because it was a really nice thing for him.
When someone's just on fire like that, a teammate, is it just like, just get them the ball again and see what he can do?
Literally, that is what it is, you know, especially with him, you know. Even if you're against, you know, you're up against it, give him the ball, it'll get you out of trouble. He'll change the game just from a bit of skill, or, you know, anything he does in the game, he does always affect. And like I say, it was just great to have him that, you know, you look to find you every time, really.
Yeah, Jay, you mentioned your injury issues in that sort of first season that Sadio came in. I'm interested to know what he was like around you in terms of those things. And you particularly mentioned working hard in the gym and stuff like that. Did that sort of inspire you to be able to make your comeback?
Yeah, of course, you know, it's always nice to have people, you know. Like I say, we're a good group of people at Southampton. I had a really good support group from staff and players, and like I say, it was a really, really nice atmosphere. So it was dead easy to get into that environment of working hard and you know, getting back to fitness. But no, having someone like Sadio, you know, you want to go and play with them players and play alongside him and learn off him. So, yeah, it was definitely an extra motivation to get out on the pitch and, like I say, learn from him and play alongside him.
And there was obviously a very clear model around Southampton at the time in terms of transfers. So I suppose when John says that Sadio's on fire, you want to get him the ball, you're almost probably a bit worried that, you know, if we get him the ball too much, another club is going to come and sign him.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, as a player, you don't think too much, obviously, but with the history and stuff, you do think... when they are doing so well. Like I say, Southampton set people up to do well, which is, like I say, it's always a great club and it's always got a place in my heart. But it's that's the danger. You know, obviously he's on fire. Obviously getting attention from big clubs, and obviously Liverpool coming, and you can't begrudge him for going, because obviously what he's done with the club and stuff is amazing, and it's where he deserves to be. So it's like I say, you're always mainly proud and buzzing for him, really, you know, because he deserves it.
I think the summer before, there was a lot of rumours about Manchester United, and I found some quotes from Ronald Koeman in press conferences, a bit spiky, actually, before the start of the season, saying, you know, we're not selling anyone else and this is the squad we want to go into. And obviously Southampton are doing well there. I think it's seventh and sixth in those two seasons. And so, yeah, you know, Koeman obviously wants to keep his squad. But how do players sort of react when sort of stuff like that's going on? Is it a case of, you know, are you used to it? Do you tease someone a bit in the dressing room if it's all in there, the going to Man United? How do you guys sort of react, because obviously we don't see that?
I think as players, you know, you're obviously aware of it, but I think, you know, you've got a job to do, and you're very focused on the team you're with and where you want to go to in that season. So obviously there's always a bit of, you know, in the change room you can, you know, give someone a bit of grief, saying, like, are you going, when are you going and stuff, are you still here and stuff like that. It's always a bit of a jokey thing, but no, it never really affects the team. Like, didn't in that sense, then it were it's almost like a good thing, you know, if you get attention from the big clubs, you're almost doing something right, do you know what I mean, as a team and as a player. So no, it's all good fun.
Yeah, you mentioned there that Mitch Hussaini doing something right, and that Southampton team was doing loads right, wasn't it? As I say, that second season when you're back in the squad, you know, back from injury, and you finished sixth that year. But you mentioned before, you know, it's a time that you feel very fondly of. You know, do you look back and at that squad, you know, the players you play with, but also, you know, at the club, and, you know, really fondly?
Yeah, that's it. You know, I look at that club, and it, even like I came from Burnley, and it, I learned a lot in my time at Southampton, stuff that were going to improve me as a player and as a person. And obviously I had the highs and lows of, you know, doing really well and then having injuries, but I always felt that Southampton stood by me and gave me the best facilities, the best way to come back as strong as possible. And then also with the players that they brought in, and, you know, I managed to play with some of the greatest players. And that time definitely is a highlight of mine, just for meeting the players alone and playing alongside them. So for me, it was a big learning curve. And like I say, that club, you know, it stuck by me when I was injured, and, you know, I always really appreciate that club.
You mentioned before about being proud of what Sadio has gone on to achieve in his career. Can you remember a particular moment at Southampton where you sort of looked at him and thought, this lad's good, he can go far?
It was probably early on, you know, that some of the stuff he'd do in training, or like you say, in games, he'd just change the game, and you kind of think that that's special, and, you know, that's in him, that, and, you know, he can only go, you know, there's no limit for him where he can go, you know, with you know, as the years go on, his experience and stuff. So for me, like, just his talent alone. But then for me, is also how hard he works. I think that was a real big standout for me, and him being humble and at the same time as, you know, as flying high in football, but also staying humble and doing what's getting him there.
And do you think you could have anticipated how fast or how much success Sadio would see in his career when you think about what he's won now, Champions Leagues, league titles, Club World Cups and things like that? Could you have foreseen that at all?
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, that's nothing short of what he's capable of doing. Like I say, his hard work, his talent and his mindset, I think, you know, he's destined to do that and carry on winning trophies and things. So I think I think it's no surprise to me that, you know, obviously playing alongside him and knowing him that he's doing that, and it makes me really happy that he's doing that.
And obviously you would have played against him a few times since. Is it nice to see each other? Do you have a sort of a little chat in the tunnel after the game and catch up?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. You know, obviously it's always difficult sometimes in the game and stuff, but, you know, you always do, you know, especially players you play alongside. But no, it's always nice to catch up with Sadio, and, you know, it's always a warm welcome to each other. And like I say, it's something that, you know, you're proud of to have played alongside someone like that. So, you know, it's always good to see him. It's just obviously not good when he's scoring goals against your team or something like that, because, you know, he's a danger. So,
I think we're done. Cheers, mate. Right. That was lovely. Thanks very much. Really nice. Thanks. I really appreciate the support from Burnley, Gemily, and you, Jay. It's going to be a nice piece. We've got one on Virgil going out today as well, and then that's been really cool. And then because obviously he was a Southampton boy as well. But then this one will be in a couple of months. But yeah, really appreciate your help, mate. It's fantastic.
No, it's dead easy to talk about Sadio. Like I said, he's a good guy and stuff. So it's dead easy. No problem at all.
Oh, top man. Well, good luck this season. Cheers, boys. Thanks, Alice. Appreciate
John.
Nice one,
Alex. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye-bye. It's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson with some inserts, of course, courtesy of Audioboom. And thanks a lot to Audioboom for helping us with these. And this one is Manscaped. Manscaped have partnered with us again. And it's officially summertime and everyone's talks about looking good for the warmer months. But few have the balls to do it. One man, Neil, who has the balls to do it is Mr. Andy Heaton, who very sheepishly, or does his wife have the balls in this scenario?
In this scenario, she has bought him using the Anfield Raps discount code, I hasten to
add. Which is the best part of the story.
She's used the Anfield Raps discount code and got him something from the Manscaped package for Father's Day to go back a couple of weeks. And Andy told us this and said, you might want to mention this the next time you're doing it. So this is...
And you said, might.
Might. I said, might. you're lucky I'm not trying to get on Sky Sports News now, and to be honest with you, mate, absolutely tremendous stuff. And he gave it a fulsome seal of approval, and that presumably Emma did as well. There's customer satisfaction all round, is what I've heard. Yeah. That's knocking around the place. So no, Manscaped absolutely coming through for the firm in every sense, John. You know, not just supporting this segment, absolutely coming through for the firm.
Doing bits in the Heaton household. If you want to look as sleek all over as Andy Heaton and get 20% off plus free shipping,
that's pretty sleek.
go to manscaped.com/wrap, manscaped.com/wrap. Everything you get includes a crop exfoliator, there we are, crop gel, and the shaver as well, which was designed for that area. And jokes aside, anyone who's had a go at design and using something that isn't designed for that area, just feeling like it's a good idea.
You want something bespoke for the area. That's what you want. Having dealt with the area and having used Manscaped to deal with the area, you want the bespoke offering.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So there's all sorts of things they throw in as well, some Manscaped boxes and stuff like that, which are very nice too. But yeah, get yourself over at manscaped.com/wrap. That's obviously WRAP, manscaped.com/wrap. 20% off plus free shipping. Get yourself ready for the summer. Up to it. I'm John Gibbons for Tour Live with an old friend of the show now. You're known by now, Matty Lachlan from the Shipbuilders. Matty, welcome back to the Anfield Wrap. I mean, you must be, you do a testimonial.
No, yeah. I feel like Carragher and Evertonian who's
infiltrated.
Yeah.
No, but I want to get you on because it's exciting times. Last time we got you on was, I think, to talk about the fact that the album was ready and was coming out. And okay, since then, it's not just been released, but it's been released to a rapturous worldwide reception. Or at least some people have said nice things.
Yeah. 4 stars in the Daily Express has been the maddest one.
I've always said great set of lads at the Daily Express.
And I'll read the room, bloody hell.
Yeah, they expect, especially like the anti-conservative party sentiments. But the reviews have been great. You know, Mojo must have been, you know, a bit of a buzz as a muso.
Absolutely, yeah. When we set out, there were like for the album campaign, there were a few kind of goals set, and you know, it's always nice. We often do have nice words said about us and one thing and another, but there's something about the prestige of like a physical, international magazine like Mojo, and giving it 4 stars as well. Yeah. Although Danny Lee, our guitarist, was fuming. He's going, "Where's the 5th star? This is a travesty."
Maybe it's on its way. Maybe the build-up. Yeah. Do you know you've got a better arm in you? That's what it is. Do you know? If you do 5, where is the to go on Danny Lee's rock opera, which is
inevitable,
which is where we're all building towards. Yeah. But it's not as long, you know. I mean, Mojo's great, and then even the Daily Express is fine. But yeah, I've noticed a lot of people on the Twitter saying that they found the band through this album as well, because you know, really, when we've been talking about it, it's like, I'll make an album for the people who've enjoyed the band to this stage. But a lot of people have found the band through this and said how much they love it, and where has this band been all my life?
Quite
a thing.
Yeah, it's you know, social media's got its ills, but this it's worked to our advantage here, especially Twitter. Kind of the word of mouth spreading across Twitter. We had a few big accounts like the Coral and Jamie Webster and that tweeting it, and then a few other like music accounts, and then it's been a bit of a word of mouth build up, kind of trickling through, and we're still the album's been out nearly 2 months now, and we're still getting people discovering it, or you know, we can see people recommending it to their mates, and it's really kind of been it's a word that gets thrown about a lot, but it has been quite organic the way it's kind of built up, and we love it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So you mentioned sort of things that you aim for when you bring out an album. You know, me and you are big fans of Tim's Listening Party, big fans of Tim Burgess generally. I mean, what a fella. The band have got a little bit of history with them, have sort of supported them at a sort of mad live event, been involved at this stage at Kendall Calling. So we were hopeful, weren't we, rather than expectant of a Tim's Listening Party, but the big man's come through. It's Monday night.
It is, yeah, Monday the 11th at 8 o'clock. That was, so kind of a good review in something like Mojo was one of them, getting played on Six Music, which Chris Hawkins came through with that. But for me, the main one was getting a listening party. It was a staple of lockdown, wasn't it? It certainly got me through many a dreary night, and just the community around it, it's just fantastic. And so that was an absolute, you know, the number one target for me to get one. So to be asked to host one next Monday, it's my head spinning. Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. I can't wait.
Yeah, for those who don't know the concept, we actually had Tim Burgess on to talk about it all those months ago in lockdown. But the idea is that we all listen to an album together, Matty, and then we all share our feelings towards it. So obviously, you know, it only works if people who've worked on the album get involved. So the musicians, you know, the producer, in some cases, things like that, you know, use the hashtag and live react to the album as they listen to it. So share your feelings on, you know, how you wrote your song. You know, I mean, I'm already picturing the flowery bollocks that Matty's going to come out with. to be honest with you. But we'll all get through that together. But also the audience join in. So that might be people who love the band, who want to talk about, you know, when they first heard this song, and this one's great live, and I love what I love what Danny Lee does in this guitar bit, which is every song. But also be great if people, you know, who haven't heard the album before want to enjoy it along with everyone else for the first time, is get stuck in, press play at 8 o'clock and join in on the hashtag and get stuck in.
That's it, yeah. But the hashtag's Tim's Twitter Listening Party, and then hashtag Springtide, because that's the album title. But you're right, yeah, I'm gonna be insufferable on it inevitably, but like hearing people like yourself, you've played on Three Tacks, John, you know, so hearing people get involved, or memories of, because it's been a while getting the album together, you know, so there's been many gigs, or even just general thoughts on the album and this, that and the other, and you're right, there's something always magical about watching the artist tweet along. I remember, I think you and I, we kind of tweeted along with the Coral with the first album, and then Supergrass, I think, it was just a real thrill, because anyone can chat about an album that they like, but to have it live as you're all kind of pressing play at 8 o'clock, it's quite a buzz, isn't it?
I mean, the Coral one should be in the loof, to the comments was quite spectacular.
It was, wasn't it?
But no, this, I mean, to be fair, I'm gonna be over in Asia, Marty, so it's gonna be 2 a.m. in Bangkok where I am, so mine could go in wild and unexpected places. I'll probably be crying by the end, Matt, but the album means a lot to all of us, doesn't it, and everyone who's worked with the band, and but especially you know a labor of love to have you know the songs that you've been working on, you know, this isn't the only band you've been in, of course, but to have the songs that you know been a big part of your life, now and you know recorded and released for forever and ever as part of the great rock pantheon of this country. it's quite nice.
It is. And speaking of the Coral, Nick Power from the Coral, God love me, messaged me the other day giving me tips on how to manage it. And his final one was the best. He said, just final word of advice, don't press shuffle. He said he did it on the second one for Magic and Medicine. He said it had me on the ropes, so press shuffle by accident.
no one knew what you were on about. Yeah. I mean, that is good advice. So, Yeah, so this is Monday. Do you have any speaker? What else have you got to look forward to, mate? Because, I mean, the releases have been sort of staggered, haven't they? Digital releases and a physical release because of the way of the world and stuff like that. So where are we all up to with that?
So we, by the end of this month, we'll have the physical products, we've been assured. That's been a drama in itself. That's been a Twitter story in itself. But we've been assured that by the end of the month, we'll have the physical product. So we're having a bit of a party in Carnival Brewery on the 30th of July, which is Saturday. It's free entry, so it's just kind of open to everyone. We're hopefully, all being well, we're going to have the physical products there for people to either pick up or buy. We're going to do a bit of an acoustic set with a few of our mates. We're going to play the album over and it's in a brewery, and surely if anyone can organise a piss up in a brewery, it's us, surely. Surely. So we're going to have that, and then we've got a few gigs we're ironing out. We're doing a bit of a tour. And then we're halfway through album two, actually, with all the delays and everything, we thought, strike while the iron's hot. And so we're six songs into album two, and that'll get us our fifth star, honest to God. You want to hear it?
You want to get some other fella on trumpet? That'll make the difference. get a real player in. Honestly, imagine if you did. Imagine. Matty, I mean, congratulations on the album.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for all your help and support. Thank
well,
you.
No, it's been a pleasure. And yeah, Monday, do get involved. It helps, doesn't it, Matty and Tim?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because Tim's, you know, done us a bit of a solid, you know, getting involved and stuff like that, hasn't it? But obviously, you know, if loads of people get involved, A, more people will see the album. But when album two does come out, Tim's more likely to give it another go. So, yeah, so everyone get involved on Monday, whether you listen to the album for the first time or listening, you know, as an old friend of the band. Everyone welcome Monday night.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right. Top man, Matty, thanks for coming on.
Cheers. Thanks, Kimo.
You've had Jay Rodriguez, you've had Matty and Andy. It was 35-20, and I've WhatsApped it to you. Marvellous stuff there, indeed. Let's talk about who we're excited about on the pre-season tour. I'm Cade Gordon all the way. I'm looking forward to seeing Cade Gordon. I think it's not quite a big thing for Cade Gordon, and I think he's still in the realm, Robbie, of a footballer who can play a bit of football, who can relax into his football and not feel as though he's got to prove the world to anybody. But his composure last season when he got opportunities, I was excited by. And someone will play when Mo Salah doesn't play on that right-hand side this season. And if I'm Cade Gordon, I am very much trying to use this pre-season to say to the manager, you know what? Doesn't have to be you moving someone else. Could just be me every now and again, you know?
Yeah, you know what I think? I think when you've got a 17-year-old lad in your squad who backs himself as much as someone like Gordon obviously does, I think, you know, you could have all the technical ability in the world, but unless you actually believe that you can progress and become a better player and hold your own in a space like that, like what it must be, you know, at that training ground, I think that's the hallmark of what someone who could go on to be a special player, in my opinion. Obviously, there was the Arsenal game last season, wasn't it?
The Arsenal League Cup second leg semi, yeah.
Yeah, it was that game he started and he took him off because that did look like it might have been a bit of a step too far from him at that point in his trajectory. But he's had that was January, wasn't it? So he's had 6 months since then. He's been playing above his own age level, essentially, because he's still only 17. And now he's going to be going back into a pre-season with, you know, a gang of brilliant footballers. He's going to get away. He's going to get the best coaching imaginable. And if he backs himself as much as he did at the start of last season, he's only going to be better again. So it's hard not to be excited.
Who are you excited by seeing, Sean? I like the message in here that someone said Ben Doak, the lad from Celtic, who we signed, who's the 16-year-old. If he's over his injury in time for pre-season, he'll catch the eye. That's one that I really didn't see coming. We put that up, support Celtic and LFC. Who are you excited by seeing? There's a fair bit in there for Carvalho as well.
I'm fully on board the Harvey Elliott Young Player of the Year train. He's got to progress, but he has the potential to be our Bernardo Silva. Ultimately, where he can be that midfield player that can potentially fill in maybe in a 4-4-2 or something like that as and when. His pressing and work without the ball, I think, is very underrated. It's way ahead of his years. I'd argue he's possibly one of our best pressers of a ball. And without the ball, he's up there. Where he's got to show more quality and consistency is in the final third, because you think that he's got it in his locker to unlock defences, to score goals, create more goals, but it's the biggest ask going out and proving that consistently. I think though, combining him with Mo Salah and Trent, if he gets a run, I think he can make that position his own, and almost. Even, I think they've got this in mind anyway, but I think Jordan Henderson and Fabinho are just going to share the number six.
Yeah.
If Liverpool feel they've got someone who can play in the big games, I wouldn't be using him in the big games, but he's got to show it in pre-season because the competition for places is so strong. But also he's got to show the manager that he should be trusted from the start of the season. When the 3 points we get against Fulham away, touch wood, is the same as what it's worth in a title run in April, and that's the way we have to approach the season. So I think it's huge for him. I think it's really big for Joe Gomez, because I think these are players who are going to get more games at the start of the season when Liverpool rotate. And I fully expect Liverpool to rotate a lot. So for anyone who might be rotated in, that's where they've got to, A, persuade the manager that they should be kept for the following season, to be frank. And they've also got to fight for them games when more is on the line and they still want to be involved. So Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, Joe Gomez, they're sort of the ones that jump out at me. But I also think Nunes, there's no rush for Liverpool to start Nunes. So for us, it's no big deal. But I think for Nunes, it's a big preseason if he wants to be involved in the first 10 games, because there's absolutely no pressure on us to use him in the first 10.
Adam, who are you looking forward to seeing in preseason before I ask Robbie?
Well, so Sean's just mentioned the name, actually. I think for me, the thing about Nunes that I'm really excited, that I'm, how do I phrase this? There will be lots of people in Manchester and other areas that are maybe hoping to challenge for the title that will be going, they've lost Sadio Mane. He was a really important player for them. I don't think that there is anything that those people will want less than Nunez scoring like 400 goals in preseason. I mean, like, they're just going, oh, like really annoyed that we've got to this position where we've got rid of a hugely influential, really important player, and the lad that we've signed, who they were maybe thinking was going to take a little bit of time to hit the ground running, just comes out and bangs the goals in left, right, and centre. It looks like he's scoring for fun. That, and I think that would give everybody a lift in the club as well, a real sense of like, yeah, we've made the right decision on the transfer front. And I think one of the comments you've just flashed up there as well about Diaz is really like, he's just, I just love watching him. I just think he's such an exciting player. And I just want to see that more. I want to watch him every time. What I want to really see is him scoring loads of goals, because that's the thing that when he adds that, you know, I saw it in the season, people sort of said he's going to be a bit like Suarez. He's going to struggle a little bit, miss quite a few to begin with. But then when he finds his eye, he's going to be unbelievable. And I think that we could really do with that, just to sort of mean that the pressure's taken off everybody else, that just goals are flying in left, right, and centre. That's what they're the two things that I'd love to see.
Okay, Robbie, who are you looking forward to seeing?
Carvalho. For a number of reasons. One kind of to echo Sean's like choice of Elliot, I actually think that bringing Carvalho in is going to really bring Elliot on. I think having someone of a similar age who's going to be able to kind of dovetail with them in different positions, who, by all accounts, is of a similar ability, I think it's really going to push them on. I think they'll push each other on. I've seen a bit of him for Fulham, and he is very impressive. Even at that level, at that age, he's shown. My old flatmate was a Fulham fan, so we watched a bit of, like, I used to watch Fulham with him. And then at the back end of last season, when we were initially linked with him, I think you've seen him in the FA Cup against Man City. He scores.
Yeah.
He's not going to be kind of intimidated or daunted by the task of going in there and staying with Liverpool. I think, you know, this is a kid. He's 19. He's already talking about wanting to win a Ballon d'Or. And that's just like, that's insane confidence. So I'm just dead excited, because I think it's brilliant. I think that the group of young players that we brought in, even, you know, Ben Zolt got a mention before, I think it's just very exciting. But I think Carvalho, because I've seen him for Fulham last season, and I think he's going to surprise a lot of us this season. I think he might get used a lot more than we anticipate as well, to be honest with you.
And that's very, very, very fair indeed. It is a very exciting group of players. It's been a very exciting tour live. Excellent stuff. Here's me saying it's the toughest one of the year. They've absolutely waltzed through it. 43 minutes we're on at the minute. Well into Sean, to Adam, and to Robbie. Let's all take a moment to wish the big man himself, Virgil van Dijk, a happy birthday and many, many, many happy returns playing for Liverpool as well. Looking so forward to seeing Virgil on tour. Looking forward to seeing all the lads they play against Manchester United. It's on Tuesday. I know that doesn't feel real. That'd be kind of just missed that shot 5 minutes ago. And here we are, we're playing Manchester United on Tuesday as the next season starts. I say it again, thanks to Sean, thanks to Adam, thanks to Robbie, Matty, and the unlikely addition of Jay Rodriguez all the way through your tour live this week. It's been an absolute pleasure. We shall see you later. Have a lovely weekend, whatever you're up to. Sports Social Podcast Network.